ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today, we talk to Dr. Harkey Dillon about being positive. We find Amara painting out east, and this month's Blackstone feature takes us on a thrilling ride through Bombay. So relax and take a listen to the news you want to know. Hello. Thank you for joining us. I'm Cyrus Emerson.
And I'm Maya Seligman. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. What's better than taking Taylor Swift to your prom? Having her take you to the Academy of Country Music Awards. Taylor has finally responded to Kevin McGuire, the 18-year-old New Jersey guy who's battling leukemia and whose big sister launched a Facebook page urging the singer to go to prom with her brother. More than 20,000 people have liked the Facebook page so far. Now, in a posting on her own Facebook page, Taylor writes, "Kevin, I'm so sorry, but I won't be able to make it to your prom. But I was wondering, the ACM Awards are coming up. Would you be my date? Love, Taylor." The Academy of Country Music Awards are April 1st in Las Vegas. McGuire's prom at Sterling High School in Somerdale, New Jersey, is June 1st, which is also his birthday.
Wow, all because of a Facebook page. I've got a Facebook page. You think Taylor would take me out?
Maybe more than 20,000 people would agree. Hey, Cyrus, you deserve to go to prom with Taylor Swift.
That'd be cool.
She might be a little taller. I don't know. Isn't she 6'8" or something?
That might be kind of intimidating. Yeah. She is larger than life.
Yeah, especially with that guitar. Woo!
Yeah. Speaking of larger than life and guitars, Adam Lambert's 2009 collaboration with Queen was arguably one of the best American Idol finale performances ever. And when Adam reunited with Queen's Brian May and Roger Taylor at the MTV Europe Music Awards in Belfast last November, that astoundingly awesome performance renewed fans' hopes for more Queenbert duets. And now, after weeks of rumors, Adam has revealed that he will soon be fronting Queen again at Britain's Sonosphere Festival on July 7th. "I can finally confirm, I have been invited by Queen to sing one very special concert," Adam tweeted Monday morning. "Sorry to be coy about the details the past few weeks, but I made a promise to keep it under wraps as best I could. Gonna be a surreal night." The Queenbert Sonosphere concert will actually mark Queen's triumphant return to the setting of their final 1986 concert with the late, great Freddie Mercury, which makes the occasion even more auspicious for all parties involved. "Judging by my incoming mail, this decision will make a lot of people very happy," said Queen guitarist Brian May in a press release announcing July's Sonosphere appearance. "It's a worthy challenge for us, and I'm sure Adam would meet with Freddie's approval. And what better place to revisit and walk those emotional paths? It will be a rush." Now, excuse me, Maya, while I go over to Yahoo Travel to book my flight to London. And while I'm there, I might even check out the 2012 Olympics, which will be taking place from July 27th to August 12th. So 20 days in London could be a blast.
Sounds like fun to me. Hey, you know what, Cyrus? I saw Adam on American Idol when he did the finale of the Queen song, and I really liked him. What do you think?
Well, I was watching on YouTube the video from the 2011 EMAs with Queen and Adam. And I just didn't think he had the range that Freddie Mercury had. He's more like a rock singer. I don't think he could do like a cappella opera like the Jinx could maybe.
Hey, I would love to see him do an opera show. Let's go. If we ever get a chance, let's go sit in the audience and see Adam live.
Well, yeah, we could go see the Jinx's rock opera. When they were here in the studio with us, they were talking about how they're writing one right now. So it should be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it.
Ooh, that sounds great.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll get them back on the show when that comes out and hopefully get some tickets.
I'm up for it.
All right.
Well, moving from music to books, there's a story on Foxy Noxie. Amanda Knox has a book deal. The young exchange student who made headlines worldwide with her conviction and eventual acquittal on murder charges has an agreement with HarperCollins to tell her story. The 24-year-old Seattle resident, imprisoned for 4 years in Perugia, Italy, has not publicly discussed her ordeal beyond a brief expression of gratitude upon her release last October. Knox will give a full and unflinching account of the events that led to her arrest in Perugia and her struggles with the complexities of the Italian judicial system, HarperCollins said in a recent statement. Aided by journals she kept during her imprisonment, Knox will talk about her harrowing experience at the hands of the Italian police and later prison guards and inmates. She will reveal never-before-told details surrounding her case and describe how she used her inner strength and strong family ties to cope with the most challenging time of her life. The book, currently untitled, is tentatively scheduled for early 2013. Financial terms were not disclosed for what is surely a seven-figure deal, negotiated on Knox's behalf by Washington attorney Robert Barnett, whose other clients include President Barack Obama and former President George W. Bush. HarperCollins publisher Jonathan Burnham said, "She'll write a very thoughtful, reflective, and serious book about what happened, and that moves this book away from the world of tabloids to something more compelling and, in a way, more longstanding."
Yeah, I'd be very interested in reading that book. I've heard so much about it, and she's from the Pacific Northwest.
Hey, yeah, that's our part of the world.
Definitely.
Did you know that Barbara Walters actually named her as one of the 10 most fascinating people of 2011?
I did not know that. Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. I mean, spending 4 years in an Italian prison would be quite an experience to go through.
Yeah, quite a story to tell us in that book.
Definitely. And speaking of Italian prisons, Italian documentary Caesar Must Die, showing inmates of a high security prison staging Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, which I saw at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. The film was awarded a Berlin Film Festival's top award, the Golden Bear, out of 18 contenders at what is the first of the year's major European festivals. I hope that someone going home after seeing Caesar Must Die will think that even an inmate on whose head is a terrible punishment is and remains a man. And this thanks to the sublime words of Shakespeare. Vittorio Taviani said, one of the directors of the movie, "We chose Julius Caesar for one clear reason. We were working in a prison. That meant it was easy to get the message across with this play where actors are talking about freedom, about tyranny, about assassinations and murder." Paolo Taviani said, the other director of the film, the two are brothers. The festival's runner-up Silver Bear went to the Hungarian film Just the Wind, which focuses on the lives of a family of Roma as their community faces a series of deadly attacks. Roma, who make up an estimated 5 to 8% of Hungary's 10 million people, battle deep prejudice and have been deeply affected by the loss of guaranteed jobs after the end of communism more than 20 years ago. The festival's 8-member jury also included Asghar Farhadi, the Iranian director of last year's Golden Bear-winning film, A Separation, which also won the Oscar this year for Best Foreign Film, and Angelina Jolie made her directorial debut for the Bosnian War movie In the Land of Blood and Honey, which I guess is supposed to be phenomenal.
Yeah, A Land of Blood and Honey. I've heard so many good things about that.
Yeah, it was one of the stories we did a while back. So definitely have to check that out when it gets to our neck of the woods, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll show it at this year's Ashland Independent Film Festival.
That would be great. Yeah, I wonder if Amanda Knox will be in it.
Put it on your calendar. Yeah, April 12th through 16th, Ashland Independent Film Festival. I've been involved for the last few years, and it's always really great to check out the films there.
Yeah, I'll be looking forward to it. Mm-hmm.
Well, the next story is about quite an entrepreneur. It's actually about a supermodel. Do you know Kathy Ireland?
Well, I used to have a poster of her in my room, and I'm planning on liking her on Facebook. Maybe she'll take me to the prom.
Oh, there you go. I think there's a good chance. Well, the richest supermodel in the world is not Heidi Klum or Kate Moss or anyone who has walked a runway in at least the past decade. It's actually 48-year-old Kathy Ireland. Forbes reports that the former Sports Illustrated cover girls company, Kathy Ireland Worldwide, which manufactures 15,000 items ranging from clothes to home furnishings to fitness videos, raked in a jaw-dropping $2 billion last year. Ireland's cut? A cool $350 million. In comparison, just behind Kathy Ireland Worldwide is domestic diva Martha Stewart, whose company earned $900 million last year. That's over $1 billion less than the supermodel entrepreneur's company. Apparently, Ireland had money on her mind long before she was discovered at a finishing school at the age of 16. In the Forbes profile, she recalls how at 4 years old, she painted stones and sold them door to door. At 11, she responded to an ad for a paperboy, telling the editor she was instead the girl for the job. And she got it, earning $60 a month. That number grew exponentially when Ireland first landed on the 1989 cover of Sports Illustrated, making it the magazine's bestseller to date.
So yeah, 4 years old, painting stones. I never knew she was a stoner.
That's right. The brunette stunner went on to appear in the swimsuit issue 12 more times, including once when she was pregnant. In 1993, Ireland, who has also written 6 books in her spare time, first put her name on a product, a pair of socks. Soon after, she took out a loan for $50,000 to create Kathy Ireland Worldwide, and the rest is history. She signed a deal with Kmart in 1994 to sell clothing, and before long, the line expanded to furniture and other home furnishings. But after the retail chain went belly up, she severed ties in 2003, even though Kmart had bounced back from bankruptcy. It's heroic for a busy mom to go to a store. Next up for Kathy Ireland Worldwide, which has recently licensed a fur line at Macy's and bridal gowns for Mon Cheri, is shoes, hair care, and perfume, as well as shops in Europe and Asia. It's just the beginning, Ireland tells Forbes. We have a long way to go.
Yeah, you know, it is really a global economy. I mean, look at her go. And, you know, the one thing I found interesting about that story is that she's earned $1 billion more dollars than Martha Stewart, who I believe still has a line with Kmart. She left Kmart, even with a resurgence for some reason. Yeah, $1 billion more dollars. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. Well, you know, Si, it always pays to know when to jump ship, and it sure worked for her.
It did.
It did. I have to say, one thing that I know is that she, even though Kathy Ireland is very successful in many ways, she was one of the first couples to be voted off in Dancing with the Stars in 2009. So we all have our weaknesses.
Definitely, yeah. Well, maybe she'll have better luck on So You Think You Can Dance.
That would be fun to see.
So yeah, speaking of success, an Ashland, Oregon film producer found himself basking in the limelight after the Oscars when a movie called Rango, about a lizard stranded in the Mojave Desert, nabbed the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature Film. The film stars Johnny Depp and is directed by Gore Verbinski. I think the month-long process of working directly with the actors made all the difference, the 44-year-old Gary Kaut said from his Ashland home. He said he was chosen as production supervisor for Rango based on his experience in keeping budgets low and sticking to tight production schedules for independent movies. Other animated movies attempt to capture the movements of characters, but Rango captured the emotions. The actors played out their scenes together rather than separately. Animators then created images based on the emotional responses of the characters, Kaut said. Rango is the movie's unlikely hero, passing himself off as a deadly green gunslinger in the drought-stricken town of Dirt. Run by a corrupt mayor, Rango competed against other popular movies that include Kung Fu Panda 2, Puss in Boots, Chico and Rita, and A Cat in Paris. Couch said it was a departure for him to take on the Rango project because he normally produces independent projects such as Conversations with God, which was filmed in Ashland, and Walk In, which will premiere at the Ashland Independent Film Festival. Couch, who divides his time between Ashland and Los Angeles, is executive director of Southern Oregon Film and Television. "I'm at the summit of my career right now, but there's more to come," Couch said. Another Southern Oregon resident, Greg Ellison, was the natural history producer for The Tree of Life, which was nominated for Best Picture, the Oscar, of course, going to The Artist. Yay, French people!
Oui, oui!
Yeah. Viva la France! Yeah, you went to see The Artist at the Varsity Theater, right, Maya?
Yeah, I have always enjoyed seeing films there, and that's also the venue where the Ashland Independent Film Festival happens and brings in all sorts of people from all over.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to seeing The Artist. Probably the only French film I could understand.
Yeah, my mom and I, we saw it together, and we knew all those words. Yeah.
Of course, it's a silent movie. Yeah, maybe not Netflix if I can't catch it in time before the festival starts. You know, my dad did the colors for the outside of the theater.
Really? Wow.
And Katie Farrell, who's been a producer at KSKQ, she did the colors for the inside of the theater.
So. Oh, see? Community involvement. That's what I like.
Yeah, definitely. And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Blackstone's special feature. While attending an Inlandia Institute writing workshop in Riverside, California, I met surgeon and now accomplished poet, Dr. Harkey Dillon. We're pleased that he took a moment to speak with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. Today, we're privileged to have with us poet, Dr. Harkey Dillon, from Riverside, California, by way of India. How you doing, Dr. Dillon?
Good, Charlie. Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
It's our pleasure. It's our distinct pleasure. We wanted to talk to you about so many different things. You're quite a fascinating character there. You have a new book out. It's called The Invisible Hands. It's available on Amazon. And it's a book of poetry. Now, for all of our listeners out there that aren't familiar with your work, why don't you give us a little background on how you came to write poetry and what, you know, brought the Invisible Hands to fruition?
Oh, sure, yeah. Actually, I had been working on my memoir, and when I left India and went to England and then came down to the East Coast and the West Coast with many different experiences of the immigrant and somebody who wanted to succeed and settle down, you know, in a place of his choosing. It's been a great experience. So I was kind of writing my memoir and then started attending the workshop here with Professor Nolan. And what happened was a sudden transformation, which I never expected, because I actually started writing poetry, and I had never written poetry. I've never had any training. But I think it was just literally a well of emotions which is suddenly exposed. And when that happens and it comes out in verse, then it's just a very interesting experience. But I just kind of went with the flow, literally. And every time I had a thought which ended up in a poem, I started collecting them And of course, the advantage was that I could share this with the people in the workshop and get feedback. And what I got was positive feedback, so I was encouraged. And it so continued, and over the course of about a year and a half, I had a collection of approximately 70 poems, which I thought, you know, I could collate into a book and share with the world, because their poetry, the poetry is emotions and experiences of the average Joe, which I think I am, but the emotions run strong, and if people can relate to it, it gives them a sense of sharing that particular sentiment. And so it happened. And Professor Maria Simon, who was the professor of creative writing at UCR, read the poetry and the whole book, actually, and was kind enough to edit it for me and really encouraged me to go with it because she thought it was wonderful. And that gave me the strength to actually put it into a book and put it out there for people to read.
Well, we're certainly glad that you did. Now, it's kind of fascinating that you would describe yourself as a regular Joe, as you put it. And I think it's great that you can have the mindset, you know, of the everyday man, but the everyday man doesn't necessarily become a doctor and live in three different countries on three different continents. So you've had quite an incredible journey there. I've noticed in your book that a lot of your poems, you know, seem to resonate in I would say positive. You know, I mean, you talk about, you know, some of your poems are, you know, feelings of love, despair, desire, remorse. But I get, you know, a positive feedback from it. What's your thoughts on that?
Yes, I think my whole life, I think, has been, you know, there's a balance, what I call the 51%. If you are on the positive side of life's experiences and it is satisfying, then I think you're having a good life. It's the only life we have. And so we might as well make it as pleasant an experience as we can have. So I feel my life has been pleasant, and I think people have the ability to lead a very pleasant and positive life if it is looked upon by the fact that everything, if you try and make it end well, it will. But you do need the support of friends, and you need a family, and you need the end to be positive. And that's how I feel. And I think with love and, you know, the trials and tribulations we go through, if we keep trying, I think you can come out ahead. And that's how I feel. And maybe that is reflected in what I write.
Well, it certainly has been for me. You know, I'm curious as to, you know, how you, you know, arrived at this positive outlook on life. I mean, give us a little background, because, you know, you come from India. Is that where you were born and raised? Or
yes, I was actually born in the wilds of a place called Assam in India, where my father was in the army, and he was sent there to tame the... There were actually headhunters out there when he went in with his dog and his gun and his uniform. And I was born there, but I never did stay there. But we moved more centrally, and I'm actually from a state called Punjab in northwestern India. But I graduated from med school in New Delhi. And after that, I just felt, again, the urge to see the world, which, like I mentioned, it's the only life we have, and it's the only world we have on the planet. So we might as well explore it and get to know it. And with that kind of direction and maybe a sense of adventure, I kind of left India and my family and went to England. And, you know, again, it's wanting to train with another system like the British system and work in the United States. You know, it kind of led me to keep going until I knew I could settle down.
Well, you know, that's, you know, quite a journey. I mean, so many questions come to mind, but for all of our listeners out there, you're a surgeon, correct?
I'm an orthopedic surgeon, and my specialty in orthopedic surgery is hand surgery.
Oh, okay. That's quite a leap from, you know, being a surgeon to being a poet, and quite an accomplished poet at that.
Thank you so much.
How do you, you know, get your ideas? I mean, we all know, you just explained to us, you know, how you came about writing this book of poetry, but what I'm more curious about is, where did the poems come from?
I think it's just a whole life with its experiences. I think it's very important, Charlie, in my way of looking at it, is to see and notice. You know, it's the very typical expression of sometimes you see but you don't notice. Everybody sees, you know, especially, you know, those who have the unfortunate ones who can't. I mean, that's different, but they see the world through a different lens. But those who see and notice, and then if you take that one more step to experience, you're actually, every moment of one's life is an experience which you've noticed and seen. And then if you can bring that into a way where you can share with people, which becomes an expression, and you know, just a sense of how engaged you are with your immediate surroundings, with the world, and if you marry your physical self with your mental self and spiritual self, then there is an amazing wealth of sentiment that exists, which if you can put it down on paper, I feel if I can be a poet, anyone can, you know.
You know, that's that's an interesting comment, because I was just thinking as you were saying all this that there is a an English writer, and he wrote some poetry as well. And, you know, when he passed away, people asked, you know, how is he going to be remembered? And one of his colleagues said, you know, he wrote poetry, and he wrote universally an appeal that appealed to everyone, because he said to me one time, I don't do anything any different. And this kind of correlates back to what you said about being a regular Joe. I don't do anything any different than anyone else. I have the same thoughts, same feelings, same emotions. I just happen to be a guy who can express himself very well.
Yes, I agree with that. But I think there's one more step which should really exist with this, is the ability and the desire to share with the rest of humanity. I think if you can, everybody you meet, if you meet in a positive way, and you can have a certain sense of bonding, of friendship, you pick up so much from each person that is what I think the ability and the desire to connect with people makes it much more rewarding.
You know, I would agree with you. It is more rewarding. And I often say to people that there's nothing more infectious than enthusiasm. You know, and if you could, you know, just be a little more positive. I mean, yeah, you know, I think maybe, who was it? William Shakespeare said, you know, life's a comedy, not a tragedy. No matter how bad it is, at one point you'll look back on it and have a good chuckle out of it.
Right. You know, I think if you can survive an experience and be alive to talk about it, I think that's pretty positive to begin with. So, like you say, if it is going to be tragedy, but you can come out of it with some sense of it, you can maybe convert that to something more positive again. But we are surrounded by tragedy, and I think it's a part of our lives and fabric of our existence.
Well, it certainly is a fabric of our existence. I mean, you know, it happens to everyone. There's not a person that's immune to it. Do you speak Hindi?
Hindi and Punjabi. My you know, India has many, many, many languages. And being from the Punjab, my mother tongue is Punjabi, but my mother tongue being, you know, India is kind of very secular and mixed, and so Hindi is, again, a part of everyday life. So I grew up with English and Punjabi and Hindi kind of, you know, we slip into each language quite easily. And it's like Hindi and English have been combined into Hinglish. So you can say many words which are accepted by each language. So, you know, with my education, I actually started at a convent of Jesus and Mary was my first school. And I was in a school called St. Joseph's Academy, which was run by Patrician brothers from Ireland in a beautiful place called Dehradun in India. So English has been right from the beginning, and my parents always spoke English also, along with Hindi and Punjabi. So we kind of grew up in a trilingual environment and atmosphere.
Well, the reason I ask is we have an incredible following in India, and I thought if you wanted to say something to our 85,000 fans, we have about 85,000 to 86,000 people download our show a week in India, mostly from Mumbai. So if you wanted to say something to them, maybe something inspirational, tell them about your film work that you're also doing in Riverside there.
Yes, oh, that's fascinating. I didn't know that. I go to India every year and have done so for the last 30 years that I've been out of India. And that's why I just mentioned, you know, my family's in New Delhi, and I studied in Dehradun and in New Delhi. I just love the place and have, you know, deep and continuing connections with friends and family. Just went there for an alumni meet last year. And so I hope they can actually get the book from Amazon.
Oh, sure. They can get it.
That's great, because I know people in England have got it. So it would be super to for them to know that it's available. And, you know, you've got 85,000. So I hope that with the rest of the 1.2 billion you have, you're going to
create well, you know,
greater audience to reach out to.
You know what, Doctor, if you would like to tell them in your native tongue, where they can get the book, that might go a long way.
Meri kitab, jehdi Invisible Hands, Book of Poetry, Amazon.com to tusi lai sakde ho. Te jis tarah pehla kya hai ki Punjabi, Hindi, English, tusi please enjoy it and get the book. And thank you for listening, and this is a wonderful program. So hopefully, well, maybe we'll meet some of the people when I get back to India.
Beautiful, beautiful. Well,
and of course, for the Charlie, just for the festival, all the people who are listening out there, I started the Riverside International Film Festival. This is our 10th year, and we get movies from all over the world. So if you go onto the website, it's a non-profit organization, riversidefilmfest.org. So to all the filmmakers, scriptwriters, producers, look at it and submit the movies and come and visit us in Riverside in the United States.
What does it take to get a submission?
Well, you know, you can go on to Without a Box, and most independent filmmakers know about it. And we have our festival in Without a Box. And the submission process is all there, and they can do it. We look for documentaries, features, animation, horror, any kind of film, usually within the last year or two of, you know, we try and keep it very current. And it's a great festival. We have about 110 to 120 films over 10 days.
Wow, and that sounds like quite an impressive lineup.
It is. It really is. And I think they're tremendous films. I've been a producer myself, and in Hollywood, I've had a distribution company, so I kind of know the festival circuit and the distribution and the making of independent films. So it's wonderful to engage with each successive generation of filmmakers as they come along. So, you know, after 10 years, it's been a great, great experience, and we're growing pretty rapidly.
All right, everyone. We've been talking with Dr. Dylan, Harkey Dylan, from Riverside, California, who has written the book Invisible Hands, a wonderful book of poetry. It's available on Amazon.com. And he also has a film festival in Riverside What's the web address for that again, Doctor?
RiversideFilmFest.org.
RiversideFilmFest.org. Okay. And, you know, it's been wonderful, enlightening conversation. And, you know, we'd love to have you come on again when you get your memoir out.
Anytime you like. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Dillon.
To learn more about Dr. Harkey Dillon, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Talk to me. Talk to me. Swap meet Sally. Trim stamp cat. Mouse wife to mom shell in the time it took to get that new tattoo. Tattoo, tattoo.
Artist Amara proves once again that wherever you are, you're there in this interview with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
All right, everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today we are speaking with artist Amara Kopakova from New York. Amara, welcome, and thank you for coming back and visiting with us again.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
So last time we spoke, Amara, you were in Seattle working on Fat Kid Rules the World, a movie that just is going to be out in South by Southwest this year.
It is, in March.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting news, too.
It is. It's really exciting. And it just kind of popped up suddenly. Bam! Here's where it's premiering. Woohoo!
Yeah, you know, that's turned out to be quite a big festival. For all our listeners out there, South by Southwest is a film festival in from Texas. And they also broadcast it on the IFC, the Independent Film Channel.
Film and music.
Film and music, yes. Okay. Yeah, and so you were in Seattle and doing your art and working on the movie Fat Kid Rules the World, and now you're in New York. So you
and
got
now
a lot
I'm
of
in New York.
Yes, you got a lot of explaining to do. Let us know what happened.
One of those random occurrences. I'm kind of one of those people that I allow circumstance to control my reality. And circumstance just said, hey, it's time to go back to New York now. Everything lined up and everything was right. So we hopped into the car Moxie and drove straight across 2,000 miles.
No stops on the way?
We stopped at a commune in Wisconsin for a night, which was very cool. Hung out with some musicians there and got the Wisconsin vibe going. And other than that, we didn't stop. We slept in the car at rest stops. And bam, now we're back in New York, living in a livery barn in the middle of nowhere.
Are you in upstate New York or are you in the city?
We're in upstate. We're about 3 hours from the city.
Oh, okay.
Which is great. It's, you know, a perfect location. We're right close to Binghamton, which is the Twilight Zone, Ithaca, which is 10 square miles surrounded by reality, Syracuse, and then the city is just a short drive away, so it's perfect.
I mean, you're not too far from
the country and the city.
You're not too far from Lake George.
We aren't too far from Lake George.
Now, I love Lake George. Out there in the Adirondacks?
Mm-hmm. Oh, the whole Adirondacks is gorgeous. Well, it's interesting living out in the middle of nowhere because I've never done it before. You know, I mean, I've been living in cities my whole life and my art has been very urbane and very focused on the urbane. So living out here in the middle of nowhere, I started a series of oil paints called The Grand Reality that's totally Bob Ross inspired. And I mean, I hear him in my head as I'm painting them. I'm going along and saying, oh, happy trees, happy trees. Oh, there are no mistakes here, just happy accidents.
That's a great line. So I know that you're painting quite a bit these days, and you've opened up a new web presence. Why don't you tell everybody about it?
I have. It's on Etsy, which is this great site. It's like a digital shopping mall, but instead of being filled with Macy's and Aeropostale and all these huge national stores, it's all handmade objects. It's all small businesses, individual artisans who put up their work and put up their own shop. And you can go onto it and browse and find AmaraArtist.etsy.com. And my site is all paintings and prints of my paintings and work by a photographer that I work with named JK. He does my photography as well as his own work and visions.
JK, why does that sound familiar?
What is that?
JK sounds familiar to me.
JK, he's this great guy that I work with. He's my partner in crime and has traveled across the country with me a couple times. And, if you see a photograph of Amara out there, it is most likely a JK piece. He really takes the vision of what Amara can be as a visual concept to a whole nother level.
Okay, yeah, because it sounded very familiar. I know, and I'm familiar with his work now that you explained it. So how did you get involved with this Etsy? Is that what it's called, Etsy?
Etsy.
With
an E, E-T-S-Y.
Etsy, because I know that's pretty popular on the web. I've seen it.
Yeah, you know, I just kept hearing about it. I get most of my work off Craigslist, and I kept on saying, "Oh, photo shoot for Etsy for this small boutique." And I took my paintings from Grand Reality down to a shop in Ithaca, and the woman was talking about Etsy. It was like the fourth or fifth time that I had heard it, and I said, "Gee, I really should check this out." And I went down to Barnes & Noble that night. And literally had my shop done in an hour at Barnes & Noble. It's so user-friendly for sellers as well as buyers, which is really cool.
You know, you're absolutely right, and I like that concept. Have you gotten good reaction from it?
Yeah, I really have. I had a digital launch party on Facebook. I put up a radio station so we could all listen to the same music no matter where in the world you be.
And
released all the pieces, some from Fat Kid Rules the World, some from my newer works, Inspiration Music and Grand Reality. And we all had a really good time. People sent in pictures of themselves dancing in their living rooms in pajamas.
Well, that's absolutely
really an event that is of the 21st century, you know?
No, really, you're right about that, because you know the more technology just comes along, the closer it brings everybody. No matter where you be in the world, you know, it's just like, you know, you are there.
Absolutely, and I mean, having worked on this movie, this was the first movie that I've really worked on in an intensive way. I've worked on a couple, just you know, here, drop this off at the set.
Right.
But the amazing thing about working on a movie is that you're with these people for 14, 15, 16 hours a day for weeks and weeks at a time, and you get really close to them, and they're like a huge part of your life, and then the movie wraps, and boom, that's it. Everybody's gone. Everybody goes back to their regularly scheduled lives all across the country and in Canada and, you know, across the world, and you don't see them anymore. Bam, that's it. They're just gone. And being able to connect with them in the digital realm is just so amazing. I can't imagine how people lived 40, 50 years ago doing that kind of work and not seeing each other.
Well, it did happen, obviously. A lot of Pony Express, I would imagine.
Yeah, they managed to survive somehow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and the art managed to flourish in those days. Although you had to go to the city to see it. If, you know, if you wanted to see Michelangelo, you had to go to Rome, you know.
Right, no kidding. Going to the Sistine Chapel. Now look up. There he is. Everybody wave.
Yeah, and you would have to have a drawing. Amara would have to be there to draw you rather than take a picture. Which we laugh about, but actually that's what happened, you know?
Seriously. Well, and I think one of the things that's happened with the digital revolution in art, at least, is that there's not as much secrecy about your inspirations and your sources. You know, when Michelangelo and Raphael and, you know, all the way up through Picasso and the modernists, people were really very secretive about where they got their inspirations from. It wasn't something that you told people. It was something that was like part of the magic trick, you know,
right.
Ta-da, and there's a lion. And now because information is so freely available and we're existing in a world where we do have such information, artists are beginning to cite their sources, cite what's inspiring them. And, you know, I've always done that on my paintings. If you buy a painting of mine, you always get on the back this, like, mesh of hashtags of, you know, who I was inspired by, what music I was listening to, and what movies I was watching, just something to put you in into a state where you can really recreate the entire experience of the creation of the painting if you wanted to. And other artists are doing the same thing, which is so exciting and so new.
You know, having the complete description in the back, you know, it kind of puts you in the room. Like, you feel like I was physically there when she created this painting. And it's something that, like a Salvador Dali or someone, you know, back in the day would, you wouldn't know what the inspiration was, and you're right, there's a certain amount of mysticism in it, but now in the digital world, you know, it's like, you know, you get not only instant access, but you get that personal feeling of being there, and you get to see the art being created, and it opens up some new avenues, and it allows artists to become well-known and appreciate it in their lifetimes rather than, 100 years from now, we can publish the secrets of, like, well, he was at a circus when he saw this, or, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that it would be amazing to know what Michelangelo was listening to, or Da Vinci, what music he was listening to when he was creating the Mona Lisa. You know, can you even imagine how cool that would be?
Yeah, I would. You know what? I would love to know that, wouldn't you? I would really love to know what Mona Lisa was thinking when she was posing.
What got you to that place where that smile came about?
Right, because the smile is like, is that a smile? Is that a smirk? Or did he just say something witty to her?
Well, I've been doing a thing lately where I discovered this chat roulette, which was pretty cool. You know, sometimes you go through it and you see things you don't want to see, but I'm not looking at the screen. I just put it up and let people click through and find me while I'm painting.
Uh-huh.
And I set my phone up so that it's playing right next to the speaker so that they can hear what I'm listening to, and I'm just doing my thing. And, you know, people from all over the world are on this chat roulette site, and they just click to it, and bam, there's somebody in front of them painting a piece in a livery barn in upstate New York.
That's really cool.
And it's been a very exciting thing, meeting people from, like, Russia and India and Italy and China that are on this chat roulette site and happen to get paired up with me.
Yeah, you know, that's amazing. We've experienced that, too, with our show. We have a rather large following in India and Italy, of all places.
Huh.
I mean, you know, like 80,000 downloads a week just from India. So, I mean, I realize there's a lot of people there, but I don't even begin to figure out the rhyme or reason. But it kind of gets back to what you were saying about, you know, with the internet and the digital world, it's like, yeah, now we all get to be in on it. You know, and if I want to
holler out to all the people in India. Holla.
Yeah, there you go. Well, while you're hollering to them, tell them where they can find your stuff.
They can find me on Facebook at Artist Amara. That's my Facebook site.
Okay.
And my Weebly site, which is kind of my, like, portfolio site. Nothing for sale. Just check it out and see what I'm all about.
Uh-huh.
Is amaraart.weebly.com, Weebly. And, of course, as we said, I'm Amara Artist on Etsy.
All right, Amara. We want to thank you for coming in and talking with us again. And
thank you. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, you know, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. Always a pleasure. All right, Amara, this has been Amara Kopakova, and you can find her work on her Facebook page, Amara Artist, and at the Etsy store, and also at Amara, at her Weebly site, amaraartist.weebly.com, and also on Just Imagine It, Inc., where Amara is a featured artist. Thank you, Amara.
To learn more about Amara, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
Shantaram one of Audiophile's best audiobooks of 2007, can now be listened to in abridged format exclusively from Blackstone Audio, Inc. This mesmerizing first novel tells the epic journey of Lynn, an escaped convict who flees maximum security prison in Australia to disappear into the underworld of contemporary Bombay, a hidden society of beggars and gangsters, prostitutes and holy men, actors and exiles. Accompanied by his guide and faithful friend, Lynn searches for love and meaning while running a clinic in one of the city's poorest slums and serving his apprenticeship in the dark arts of the Bombay Mafia. The keys to unlock the mysteries that bind Lynn are held by two people, his mentor, Condi Khan, mafia godfather and criminal philosopher, and a beautiful, elusive Carla, whose passions are driven by dangerous secrets. Based on the life of the author, this extraordinary debut has the world of human experience in its reach.
It took me a long time, and most of the world, to learn what I know about love and fate and the choices we make. But the heart of it came to me in an instant, while I was chained to a wall and being tortured. I realized, somehow, through the screaming in my mind, that even in that shackled, bloody helplessness, I was still free. Free to hate the men who were torturing me, or to forgive them. It doesn't sound like much, I know. But in the flinch and bite of the chain, when it's all you've got, that freedom is a universe of possibility. And the choice you make between hating and forgiving can become the story of your life. In my case, it's a long story and a crowded one. I was a revolutionary who lost his ideals in heroin, a philosopher who lost his integrity in crime, and a poet who lost his soul in a maximum security prison. When I escaped from that prison, over the front wall, between two gun towers, I became my country's most wanted man. Luck ran with me and flew with me across the world to India, where I joined the Bombay Mafia. I worked as a gunrunner, a smuggler, and a counterfeiter. I was chained on three continents, beaten, stabbed, and starved. I went to war, I ran into the enemy guns, and I survived, while other men around me died. They were better men than I am, most of them. Better men whose lives were crunched up in mistakes and thrown away by the wrong second of someone else's hate or love or indifference. And I buried them, too many of those men, and grieved their stories and their lives into my own.
Few stand out quite like Shantaram, says the New York Times. Gregory David Roberts was born in Melbourne, Australia, sentenced to 19 years in prison for armed robbery. He escaped and spent 10 of his fugitive years in Bombay, where he established a free medical clinic for slum dwellers and worked as a street soldier for the Bombay Mafia. Recaptured, he served out his sentence and established a successful multimedia company upon his release. He is now a full-time writer and lives in Bombay. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to blackstoneaudio.com. Get Behind Me Now, Stay There is a Just Imagine It, Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio, Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Cyrus Emerson.
And I'm Maya Seligman. Join us next time for an all-star show.
Won't you to know?